Morning, Mr. Hammond. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, involves recovery of a stolen item, designated Chimera. You may select any two team members, but it is essential that the third team member be Naya Nordorf Hall. She is a civilian and a highly capable professional thief. You have 48 hours to recruit Miss Nordorf Hall and meet me in Seville to receive your assignment. As always, should you or any member of your IM force be caught or killed, the Secretary will disavow all knowledge of your actions. And Mr. Hunt, the next time you go on holiday, please be good enough to let us know where you're going.
This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Greetings, Mr. Hunt. Shit.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Everybody, welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment since a long time ago. 247 is this episode. My name is Scott Johnson, and with me today, Brian, 4x3 laptops were hot, Dunaway.
They were hot. Oh, hi. I'm Sir Thomas Cruise, the first of my name. Do you like my cap? I stole it from Days of Thunder. But that's not why I'm talking to you today. I'm here to tell you about something very exciting. Long have I suffered from the hateful, jealous, resentment people gave me aimed at Scientology. Well, no more. I've decided to start my own religion. I call it cruise control. And if you're into looking good, even well into your 50s and like brainwashing, dating, honeys in their 20s, then cruise control is for you. First, become an actor. Easy. Now be charismatic. A goofy, boyish smile helps. A little crooked. Now here is the important part. Running. Ironically, there is a lot of running in cruise control. So run. Don't walk. No. Like this. Run like you hate the wind. That's it. Karate chop the crap out of that thing. Nice. You got it. Nice. Faster. Nice. Grit your teeth. More grit. Watch them neck veins pop. Eyebrows up. Eyebrows up. Run like you're going so fast that the wind is going to rip your head right off your body. Oh my God, I think my heart is going to explode. Oprah, I'm coming home. Now play our gospel song. Bum, 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 bum.
This is the longest thing you've ever done.
And we're out of time.
And that's it, everybody. See you next week for... Wow, that was fantastic, dude. I don't even know what to
follow that.
Do with myself. Yeah, it's going to be hard to follow. Also with us, Randy...
Go back and re-edit.
Yeah, just put that in. Randy, jacket stuck in the van, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that I'm going to greet you this week with a mission, should you choose to accept it, and then I'll end with something about this message self-destructing. Well, you're wrong, because what I'm actually doing is taking this mask off, and surprise, I'm actually George Lucas. Okay, seriously, everyone out there, the next person who comes up to me and tells me that I look like George Lucas is getting a syringe full of 24-hour magic death poison to the neck.
Timed.
Wow, that is fantastic. Also, I love Randy's worried about his voice tonight. I think it's hot. I might be turning and maybe switching teams.
He's like the Betty Davis of film sector.
Yeah. I am all here. My voice decided not to show up.
Well, I like it. Also with us, and finally, Brian, when in doubt, inject yourself with the virus Ibit.
It's always the solution. Two guys jumping off their motorcycles collide in midair and not suffering any pain or disability? Jumping off a rock face to a little ledge around the way without any sort of support cables? Knife in the eye? This isn't mission difficult. This isn't even mission impossible. This is physics impossible. Wait a minute. Shouldn't the title of this movie be Mission 2, also impossible?
As well.
Yeah, Mission As Well.
Right.
The movie is Mission Impossible 2, a movie that I have heretofore defended as we've creeped up toward it on FilmSack, but also at the time I watched it in the theater back in 2001, whatever it was. I thought it was great.
Yeah, but you like John Woo.
I got the Woo blinders on, and I'll tell you what. Oh, I should spill this bean right now. I'm just going to spill it.
Here comes the beans.
It's not that great. It's not very good.
That's not what I was expecting to hear you say.
Yeah, it didn't hold up the way I'd hoped. And it's not that it... I don't know where my head was back then. I thought anything John Woo did was magic. And I loved his movies. And I still do. And I... You know, this doesn't even hold a candle like to like Hard Target or Face Off or any of those.
You know who else used to be magic? Ronald D. Moore used to be magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he's still doing some decent stuff. That show he's got on Stars right now. The... What's it called?
Outlander.
No, Outlander. That's it, Outlander. You said it right.
You said the word.
Yeah, you said it right.
I just wanted to come up with it myself.
It didn't sound right in my head.
I'm sorry.
No. It's fine. He's doing good work there. Some would say. I don't know. Ron Moore. It's hard to say.
What I'm saying is, I used to love this movie, and I'd say Ronald D. Moore as well as John Woo as well as other things. Now I hate this movie. And I got to take the credit away.
Yeah, it's not that
interesting.
Not liking this movie all of a sudden, isn't that like saying I don't like any of John Woo's stuff? Because I feel like I feel like John Woo is becoming a formula rather than a person. Right. He is a template. He's not a man. He's a template.
I would say he was a template because his work in the last... probably 5 to 8 years has been almost solely back to his roots doing Chinese stuff, but all like historical dramas.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'd say his action. So stripping out that, saying that his American action films were very much, for me anyway, very much a template. You know, it's got to do this, have this. We have this kind of stunt. We have to have the guns pointed at each other really, you know, close by. We have to have birds flying in slow motion. We have to have flame.
What kind of birds?
Doves.
Doves. Well, these were pigeons in this one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, were these pigeons?
They were doves. Were they just had like a pigeon mask on.
Nicely said. Look, I just, before we let Fletcher do his thing, which is in the best way possible, by the way, because he did this from the road, somewhere out in the middle of nowhere.
On a motorcycle, I hope.
He was in a parking lot of a Best Western or something because he's been traveling and he couldn't do this at home. So it kind of works in a way because it's like this weird radio voice. For the message stuff like this, here I'll play that one more time. Where's the Fletcher bit? There you go. Here's the whole one, by the way.
Greetings, Mr. Hunt. Brian. Randy. Shit.
Was he talking into a cup, into the phone?
It's just his phone, I think, with his hand cupped over it or something. So his whole intro is like that, and I'll play that in a second. But what I wanted to say about what Brian's saying is I kind of agree. What it feels like is, so his Hong Kong stuff, amazing, incredible. Hard Boiled, one of my favorite movies ever made. The Killer, amazing. He made those without any restrictions. There's no real, quote-unquote, Hollywood system. There's no, suits trying to tell him what to do. He comes to America, and he applies his trade and does a lot of his same things, but then everything else feels a little hamstringed, like a little bit held back, a little bit like stories, just a little, I don't know, it's too easy, it's too soft, it's too typical, there's nothing happening there, and it's not like, you know, The Killer or Hard Boiled had amazing stories or something, but it was a lot better than this, and I just feel like good, John Woo can be good over here with a good concept and decent writing and good acting.
I didn't think I was going to defend this movie.
I didn't think I was
like
going to have to.
I think I'm going to have to pick up the
torch.
Defense.
All right. Well, let's play the intro and then we'll get to it. And we can figure out why the hell this dropped so far for me. So here you go. It's Scott Fletcher explaining.
Hello, Agent Johnson. Randy, Brian. This week's mission is Mission Impossible 2. With computer genius Luther Stickle at your side and a beautiful thief on your mind, you, playing Ethan Hunt, race across Australia and Spain to stop a former IMF agent from unleashing a genetically engineered biological weapon called Chimera. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to watch this mediocre movie and then talk about it on this podcast. This podcast will self-destruct in 10 seconds. Good luck.
All right. I like it. I like it a lot.
This is in Australia? I don't remember that.
No. Well, yeah. Part of it was. Remember?
Yeah. Quite a bit of it was.
Yeah, I think most of it was supposed
don't you
to
remember
be.
Remember the opera?
Oh, the opening. I forgot about that. Yeah, but yeah. I thought that was just like just a minute, though, wasn't it?
He was there. Remember, he was in the hut with Luther and the Australian pilot guy and all that. Remember all that? That was all
Australian too.
Yeah.
The crazy pilot guy trope. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally big time trope. Yeah. By the way, that guy's basically got replaced by. So there's a combination of Luther and him is now the computer nerd. Now what's his name? Played by freaking Shaun of the Dead. I can't think of his name. All of a sudden,
Simon Pegg.
Jeez. He's basically the amalgam. Simon Pegg is the amalgam of those two dudes in the more recent films.
But, remember who the first one was, right?
Jean Renault.
Oh, yeah, Jean Renault. That's right.
The only person ever to be in a Tom Cruise movie who has a nose that rivals Tom Cruise.
Didn't he turn out? And, you know, it's funny because the blur of Mission Impossible coming at the beginning. Oh, yeah. Now, is he working for the other guy or is he on the other side? Like all of those things I always seem to forget. And I always second guess myself. Was Jean Renault. He was working for MI6, but he was really working for the bad guys, right?
I think he was. No. He was working for him the whole time.
Working
yeah.
For himself.
Okay.
He was he was kind of a butt later, though, right? Like he kind of said, you guys suck. I'm leaving or something.
Butt later. Yeah.
I want to argue with Brian Dunaway. I can't believe how bad this movie is now. And I also want to say I saw this at the theater the night it opened with my friend James Pankhost. James came out of the movie saying he hated it, and I held that against him. You were right, and you were ahead of your time.
It's funny because I flipped because when Mission Impossible 1 came out, I loved it. I mean, I watched that movie a million times, and I was disappointed when I saw Mission Impossible 2 at the theater because I felt like it lost its dark edginess that the first one had, that you know, double agent kind of really intense moments that just didn't seem like they were here. But this time, I enjoyed this movie for its wooness. The wooness really came through to me.
The wooed you over?
Yeah, it wooed me over.
I never in my life thought I would say this. Anthony Hopkins was awful in this
movie. He was terrible. He was a bad spot.
Who he is. Like, that wasn't anything. Okay, there's.
Yes, it was badly directed. He was really badly directed.
I agree, but here, okay, they let something slip in the very early goings on. And remember, there's a scene. So the way the movie works is there's this cold opener on a plane. Oh, it's Ethan Hunt. No, it's not. It's a dude with a mask. It's Duggar A. Scott. Almost was Wolverine, but this movie kept him from being Wolverine.
Right. Oh, thank God.
Thank goodness. Yeah, that worked out. That worked out well for us. And then they go to Moab, Utah at Dead Horse Point with where I've actually been there. It's beautiful there.
Besides the dead horses.
Yeah, dead horses. The story's really cool.
They're all pointing.
The reason they call it that is really great. But anyway, you got Ethan Hunt hanging on the side of this rock, and it's all very convincing and cool, and he's doing his own stunts, blah, blah, blah.
That was a big deal back in the day.
It was a huge deal, yeah.
It was, and I want to stop you for just a second. Do you remember seeing the entire scene as a trailer?
Oh, yeah, no. They did the whole thing as a trailer with that music.
It was a really big deal because the trailer starts with the beginning of the scene and ends with him throwing those glasses and they explode. And I remember thinking this was the first time I ever saw a trailer where they just took a whole scene from the film
and
played it straight.
It was very effective, I thought. And they used that music. Okay, so Ibbot, I thought of you with this trivia. That Ico music song, whatever it is. How's it go?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Ico?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Ikea.
Yeah, that one. Not the first Tom Cruise movie to feature it. It was also featured
Rain Man.
Yeah, Rain Man.
You hear it as he's driving in front of all of those spinning blades in front of, I think, Santa Barbara.
Definitely
but
10 spinning blades, yeah.
Palm Springs or wherever it is.
Anyway, where was I headed with that? So they get to the...
And oddly enough, it's a New Orleans song. You don't hear it anywhere in Interview with a Vampire.
Oh.
Just saying. Perfect opportunity to make it a trifecta.
We need to watch Interview with a Vampire because I remember that
I agree.
Oh,
yes.
that was huge.
Now, that opening scene, though, where you get... I agree. We should watch that. Where you get the freaking voiceover from Hopkins, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I played it at the top of the show here. I want to play part of it again. Because I think he flubbed a line and they left it in. So I want you to listen to this very closely. Hold on a second. Okay. I'm going to try to skip ahead.
Morning, Mr. Hunted. Involves recovery of a stolen item, designated Chimera. You may select any two team members, but it is essential.
That one. But it is
essential? No, that sounds...
I think he jacked it up.
That sounds like exactly how Anthony Hopkins would say, but it is essential.
Let's find it. Okay, I just heard you do it. In fact, do it for me one more time. Enunciate that.
Say but it is essential.
All right, here you go.
Select any two team members, but it is essential.
There's a couple extra syllables in there, I'm telling you.
We talk about this every time we watch a John Woo movie. He just doesn't care. if the enunciation is there.
Oh, we have brought that up. Language. That's right. We have talked about that on here. Mm-hmm. Very specifically, the last... we still have Paycheck to do, don't we?
Yep.
That's the one John movie that I saw in the theater that I didn't like then. And I've liked all of them in the theater, so I don't know what I'm going to make of that now.
You can't, I think we're going to have to go ahead and admit that when a John Woo film, you just can't be concerned with dialogue because there's such beauty in motion, especially like the scenes where they're driving the cars, and he's really good at having the car dance where, you know, the cars are practically dancing. I mean, it's
that motor, the magic motorcycle, and that motorcycle stuff is insane.
And this is our fourth John Woo movie, and you know Scott has addressed Hard Target as though he would like to marry it.
I really would, or at least penetrate it. I love it.
Penetrate it. Did you just say penetrate it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But honestly, if you set that movie aside, this goes with Broken Arrow and Face Off so well. They're like the same movie. With just different people.
Yeah, no, there's
not
the scene.
Cajun Mon.
Sure, and there's these scenes, and I've captured some of this in audio, but there's the same kind of scenes are set up where bad guy, good guy are in kind of a quote-unquote face-off, where they're in a room where they have to cut down the shooting and then have this yelling dialogue. Like, kind of, it's basically the exact same conversation that
This could have been Christian Slater and John Travolta. Yeah. This could have been Nick Cage and what's his name?
Yeah, he does.
John Travolta.
John Travolta. Yeah, same guy. But yeah, no, he's definitely he dips into this well, and it's like the three or four John Woo tropes. Now the thing is, when he was doing this stuff in Hong Kong, it was super inventive and very cutting edge and all that. But in a way, I feel like the world learned from him and then quickly moved past him, and now we have things that make that all seem really weirdly archaic. And I don't know how that happened or how quickly it happened or, you know, that mole on his nose is so big he was distracted or something happened.
I can't see
past my
hold on a minute. I got to tuck it down here. Hold on a second. There we go.
My derma slurgia.
People
eyes
like,
are up here.
Actors like Tom Cruise have moved past him.
Yeah.
You know, like Tom Cruise makes some junk, but Tom Cruise makes a movie like Edge of Tomorrow, and you don't even care who the director is.
It's pretty good, by the way, right. Edge of Tomorrow. It's on is it on Netflix or HBO Go?
It's called,
right now?
It's called Die, Kill, Repeat, or whatever.
Right.
What is
right.
it now?
Yeah.
Based on the book.
That's the
yeah.
new name they gave it. And unofficially new name, because they put the spine of the DVD or the Blu-ray says Live, Die, Repeat, but in small type it says Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, it does say that there?
Yeah, they just want to, you know, I think they realize that Edge of Tomorrow is the stupidest name for a sci-fi movie. Maybe a good
generic. I mean, you just totally forget it. You can't remember it.
Well, the book, Edge of Tomorrow, the book, Live, Die, Repeat, I think that's always been a good name. It worked for the book. Why didn't they just use it in the damn
movie? I don't know why they didn't keep it. They should have.
Yeah.
It's tough. They probably looked at it and said, yeah, we can't sell that name.
And by the way, I just said the director of that movie, nobody cares who that is. I mean, of course, he's a great director. It's Doug Liman. He did the Bourne movies. He did Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is fantastic. He's responsible for Swingers back in the day. We were just talking about him last week. Like, but
are you worried you're not going to get Christmas cards from him anymore?
But I'm saying when you watch Edge of Tomorrow, you never once think, "Oh, this is a Doug Liman movie." Yeah, you know, like you do with John Woo,
right? Or any, there's, I mean, in a way, it's like, well done, John Woo. You have a signature that everyone recognizes, but also I feel bad for you because you've done a thing over and over and over and created kind of a cartoon of yourself. And I don't know. It's not fair because we all know that Hard Target is the best thing ever made, and we should all go watch it again.
Terrain, pull up. Terrain, pull
anyway,
up.
I've got some. I got some trivia here about this whole thing. Yes, Ronald D. Moore. I don't want to skip past that too fast, but he did co-write this along with Bruce Geller.
Can you name a Ronald D. Moore property that doesn't have anything to do with aliens?
Let's think.
I've been trying. I've been thinking about all these Caprica and Roswell and so on.
Star Trek,
Battlestar Galactica, Star Trek, like. He's pretty aliens sci-fi centric, right?
Okay, Wayne, I got one. Oh no, that was the one about aliens. Hold on. I think you're right. Is this the least alien? you could argue some of this stuff is a little alien, but yes, it's probably the least
like
alien.
Aliens.
Yeah, I mean they got into areas like super viruses and things that are kind of the purview of some science fiction, but it's still, you know, it's more grounded than most. So,
well, it kind of makes you wonder when you see a bunch of writers on a project like this, because it's, you know, there's four people credited with writing this. Uh-huh. Do you wonder if maybe Ronald Moore wrote something as a sci-fi piece with aliens and then they repurposed it for something like this.
Oh, right, good question.
You know what? This would be a really good Mission Impossible thing.
That happens. Yeah, we'll just
take the aliens out and replace it with Doug Ray Scott. Boom, there's your movie.
There's your movie right there.
He's the alien.
Didn't even take the aliens out.
Him and that
he was
guy.
Actually creating another series of V where everybody is dressed as humans, but they're lizards underneath, and they just said, "Hey, we already got the prosthetics."
Yeah. By the way, real bit tip of the hat and some credit before we skip right past that to Brendan Gleeson. I like him too, but Richard Roxburgh. Mm. This is the dude. He plays the henchman with the cut finger who eventually.
Oh yeah.
That guy. He was in all movies that I've ever seen him in. You're like, oh yeah, good, great. He looks like a psychopath, a European something something. Great, he's perfect for your role. But you know, nothing real notable in Moulin Rouge. That guy, freaking to me, just chews the scenery. He's fantastic right. in Moulin Rouge. He's the he's the courtesan who comes to try to get what's her name to marry him.
Right,
kind of goes starts going crazy by the end because he's sure that she's having an affair with Obi-Wan Kenobi over there. Anyway, mm-hmm. if you haven't seen Moulin Rouge in a while, go watch him. He's great. He's freaking fantastic in there.
Right. And speaking of Richard, you know they're rebooting the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and
he was in that.
M.
Yeah,
yeah, he was M in that, and I'm kind of excited. I kind of got a guilty pleasure with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
You're guilty pleasure on a lot of things, and I want to like I always want to test those limits. Like, does Brian Dunaway like the Fantastic Four movies? Like, how far does this rabbit hole go?
Which one? Yeah.
What's your most guilty pleasure?
Yeah,
most guilty pleasure. It's probably going to be the fact that you guys don't know this about me, but God, I love musicals.
What?
Like guys and dolls.
Really?
Oh man!
I didn't know this. This is great.
Yeah. We watched Annie, the new Annie, over the weekend, and I was kind of like shying away from because I'm like, I don't want to see them butcher this because I grew up with Annie and that was a fantastic movie. I think what they did was pretty fantastic.
All right. And bottom line, Annie for Film Sack.
Annie for Film Sack. Sure. I mean, some of the things that fit into our society at that point would actually be kind of funny now to look back at it is what we think culturally.
Well, this is the new one, right? Let's make sure I got the right one in my head. All
the
right.
Jamie Foxx, Cameron Diaz.
Not the one my sister bought in the 80s and played incessantly all day.
No, I love that one. That's the classic. That's the one that was just amazing. Love it.
I did not know this of you. So hold on a minute. We can't leave this too quickly because this is new information.
So you were talking about Moulin Rouge as well.
I love Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, Moulin Rouge is great.
Yeah, that's a great movie. But it's also, I don't know, you could almost say people who aren't normally musical fans are going to like Moulin Rouge because of how freaking weird and mashed up it is.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about musicals you like, what's on your list of like the best? Like White Christmas, like that far back or something newer? Like where are you at?
The oldest stuff that goes back really is Marlon Brando and watching them and Guys and Dolls. That's a fantastic thing. Rogers Hammerstein, love all that good stuff. Sound of Music.
That's great, dude.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. I love learning this. I have no judgment here. I think this is awesome.
Right. There's something that makes me feel, it's so comforting. Mary Poppins. I love all of those kind of movies. They just that is a super guilty pleasure. I will sit and I will watch those by myself.
Wow.
It's like, screw you people. I'm gonna
just visualize, you know, Brian Dunaway hanging out, just humming along with the do.
Oh, I sing all of it.
Washing dishes or something and
totally do that.
Well,
I just totally do that.
That's amazing. I think good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, really. How do we top that?
I think the first 15 minutes of this movie are especially bad, and I think it gets better after that.
Especially bad.
Yeah.
And now when I watch that scene in Moab, it just hurts. This is so wrong. It's nothing like rock climbing. It's nothing like something that this character would do, by the way. Why is this character doing that? Can
Ethan
I get a good answer?
I thought Ethan Hawke would do this because he was...
Ethan Hunt.
Ethan Hunt. I would think he would do that because he's constantly in those positions, like in the first one where he's rappelling down the ropes and he's got to have perfect body control to be able to balance over top of the floors and that kind of stuff. You wouldn't think that'd be appropriate?
Sharpening his craft.
Right?
Maybe I'm too old school on Mission Impossible, but... If you go back to the inception of this on television,
Peter Graves.
I just don't understand this character suddenly being Jason Bourne or whatever John Woo tries to make
right.
I'm not even sure I'd go as far as Jason Bourne. I just feel like it was like we need to make him more metal, more hardcore, more something. And I don't think that was a good move. I think they picked it up nicely with 3. 3 fixed it for me.
Yeah, 3 was good.
Pretty much across the board, 3 is the best of the bunch.
3 has Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. It's 3 with Hoffman. It's directed by J.J. Abrams, written by him as well.
It's a tough movie to
Really? Love that movie.
Well, because it starts with Felicity getting her head exploded, and you see it in her eyes, and it makes me want to vomit.
Yeah, that's a hardcore piece of business for sure.
I'm mm-hmm. here for that.
Yeah, but it's also probably the best structured, the most emotionally resonant. The characters, I think, are the most interesting.
It gets dark again.
Yeah,
I like that.
Morpheus is in it.
But that's the thing with these movies, and maybe more so with 1 and 3, but you know, any character, don't get too attached to anybody. I mean, they can turn, they can die instantly. Emilio Estevez is gone in the first 5 minutes
forks,
of the first
forks
one.
Forks to the face. Elevator forks.
I hate to jump ahead, but do you guys see them killing off Tom Cruise in the fifth one?
No.
No.
No. I don't think they can do that.
Yeah, I think he
wants this is a franchise more, you know, as much
but
as anybody
else. But he's old
else.
and they're adding Jeremy Renner, and I just can't help hoping that they kill off Ethan Hunt and promote Jeremy.
They keep it. The funny thing is that's 2 movies then they're trying to do that with Jeremy Renner.
The Bourne movies and then this.
Yeah, that's weird that they would try to pull
that
off.
Those Bourne reboots, sort of reboot.
I like that movie.
I didn't like that.
I like that one just fine. I didn't have any problem with it. I don't know why the hate for that movie. You should see it. I would love to hear your opinion.
I do want to see it. Yeah, I like the Bourne movies, so surprised I haven't seen it yet.
I get why people are going to not like change like that, because it does. It'd be worse if it was like, hey, he's Jason Bourne. We just have a new actor doing it. I would have rolled my eyes at
really?
That.
Really? I would have liked that better. I would have been like, okay, it's a little soon for a reboot, but I'm okay with that.
I think they're setting that thing up for a sweet crossover. That's what I think.
Oh, totally they are.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm into that. That's a cool idea. I think that movie's fine.
Great idea.
Yeah, yeah. And I like when people are running from the Koreans. I think that's a great theme in your spy
this
movies.
Just in, they're looking for Jeremy Renner to replace Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones.
That's a terrible idea.
it's a horrible idea.
They need to put Chris Pratt in there. As much as I feel like we're reaching peak
please
Pratt,
don't.
He's pretty dude. He would be great as the adventuring Indiana Jones.
He would be great for one episode of that, and then it would just be trash. You know.
Well,
be
I mean,
good for one movie.
Hold on now. Let's talk about this for a second. He's got the charm.
He's Pratt it all up, man.
He's got the looks. He's in great shape. He looks great. He would look great in that hat, that jacket, that shirt, that whip, those pants. All of it fits. It's all good.
I'm putting my hands on my hips right now.
All
right,
go. What do you say there?
No, I'm just impersonating Chris Pratt.
Oh, you're doing it now. Oh, okay, good.
Good. Love Chris Pratt. I think he is fantastic. I just don't want to see him in
everything.
That much stuff. Yeah,
so
everything.
there was a 10-year stretch when they could have replaced Harrison Ford with Nathan Fillion and rebooted that thing and made 5 movies that would have made $1 billion.
Right.
And I don't understand why it didn't happen.
They were, I don't know, Fillion, is he really? I mean, I'd love
him. Don't you say something bad about
Nathan Fillion. I love Nathan Fillion.
He'd be perfect for it.
He would be good.
Yeah, I mean, you need that.
And Sean Connery can still be the dad. I mean.
But hold on. Are you talking, if you're talking about post-Firefly Nathan Fillion, I think it's important to remember that Most people do not know who that guy is,
right,
and don't necessarily have the connection that we do. So yes, we see him as this swashbuckling dude and that he would be perfect, but I'm not surprised they didn't do it because it's just not in the public consciousness. He's Castle now to old ladies.
Sure, sure. But so I'm just saying like he was in his early 30s, just coming out of Firefly, and the guy couldn't have been a better fit for that role or a role like it. I don't understand.
I agree. He would have been great. There's no question about it. Everybody wants him for Uncharted, and you know the reason they want that is because Uncharted's basically Indiana Jones, and you know it's all comes back to that. But I'm just saying, listen, Dunaway, I'm with you. I don't want peak Pratt. I don't want Pratt too much. I get it.
I think like this. Okay, look, Harrison Ford is rugged, but he's kind of he's kind of a dick, but he's kind of a ladies' man. And I like Chris Pratt, but he's kind of a goober. As far as the ladies go, I mean, he's, I'm sure women would say, oh, he's hot, he's sexy, but is he suave?
Well, does he need
Indiana
to be?
Jones has kind of got to be a little bit.
I don't think Indiana Jones is suave at all.
He's a
Whatever. What is suave? Hold on. Define that word. What is that? What does that
like
even mean?
Like Tom Selleck is suave. Like having some machismo that some swagger, some, you know.
I mean,
Aqua
Chris
Velva.
Pratt. Chris Pratt can he can rock. He's like he got solid for like Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, he was buff.
Well, he's
looking.
Buff,
he was
but
tough.
Does he? Can he be sexy serious as opposed to just
right.
sexy?
Well,
silly?
Do you guys feel like right. do you feel like Jurassic World might answer that question, or do you think it will just?
And I think that's perfect for that.
Well, we'll find out. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, if he comes off as like a really cool and has that factor you're talking about as
he
a raptor trainer,
he is leading a pack of of raptors, okay, on a motorcycle. I'm not gonna no.
I want you to say the full name of the raptors. Say it.
Raptors.
Velociraptors.
I heard Velociraptors and I was in love.
Here's the last thing I want to hold on to Chris Pratt for a moment because we haven't talked about on Film Sack. We haven't talked about the seven people who've been cast to play the Magnificent Seven in the upcoming reboot.
Oh yeah,
being directed by Antoine Fuqua.
Yeah, who I love.
Fuqua.
Fuqua, as far as I'm concerned, is a student at the feet of John Woo, who does better work now because of him. But anyway. Director of Training Day, director of The Replacement Killers, which I love, as you know, many other movies. Anyway, continue on.
So the Magnificent Seven, Chris Pratt, Vincent D'Onofrio, Denzel Washington, Ethan Hawke, Peter Sarsgaard, and then the two guys you might not know, Matt Bomer and Luke Grimes. That is one of those things where I'm just like, how does Chris Pratt fit in this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like, I don't know, he doesn't seem like, he seems like the odd man out to me.
Mm.
The rest, like maybe because he isn't suave, I guess that's defined as.
But I wouldn't say that Peter Sarsgaard is suave, or that
really?
Vincent D'Onofrio is suave.
Yeah,
no.
I
agree with that. But they seem like the swashbucklers who could join together in a troop and draw some guns and shoot people.
I could see Chris Pratt shooting people and doing it with a smile. Sure.
Yeah,
put the right hat on him. Some nice chaps.
I just don't get it.
Some nice chaps.
He just does not. He comes across as a California surfer dude, fine, but as a Western gunslinger, I don't know. It's just weird.
I don't know yet either. That's a hard call. We're not going to know until 2017 on that one either. That's a ways off.
Yeah. Denzel Washington. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Who's the preacher? It doesn't say.
We'll be
yet.
A couple Star Wars is in by then.
I'm a huge fan of the preacher character in that old. Show also the TV series version of Magnificent Seven. It was played by Hellboy there. What's his beak?
Really?
Yeah, the preacher character is one of my favorites, and they got to do that right. And if I had to guess, looking at this cast, I'm guessing that's either Sarsgaard, who's kind of creepy, or Vincent D'Onofrio, who would be just about right, but he looks more like a bruiser. I don't know who Denzel is. Either way, I'm in. Bring it on. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. That sounds great. That movie. I didn't know they were. I didn't know
it's
that was
good,
official.
And it's a good cast, you know, when you compare it to things like The Expendables, where you just see, you know, action star after action star, and everybody's going to be fighting for screen time. These are talented thespians.
Mm-hmm.
Thespians.
Yeah, or thespians.
Or thespians.
Yeah. Whatever. I like
it. But I think they're going to be, you know, they're going to play off each other really well, as opposed to always trying to be the most screen time kind of thing.
Well, this movie originally clocked in at John Woo's movie clocked in at 3.5 hours. The studio balked at this length and told him he had to get the length down to 120 minutes. This could explain why there are so many plot holes and continuity errors in the theatrical cut. So it's possible there's a better cut out there, or
well,
could have been.
I'm sure that 3 hours is probably at least another hour of slow-mo.
Yeah.
Because that'd eat up the time, my man.
What's up with that? Did we need that much slow-mo?
No, we really didn't. We didn't need, like, Tom Cruise slowly walking in front of the fire looking for Tandy Newton.
I was like, yeah, because it was such a long stare, and it's like, oh, my God, come on.
I don't like it. I also, the love interest, I did not buy this whole thing at all. There was no chemistry there. Did not buy
it.
It
was all sexual.
And also, what happened to her? Like, this is another problem with these movies that are serialized like this, is you got, you know, you go from your love interest in the first one, completely just poof, gone. Where'd she go? I don't know. There's this new lady.
Emmanuel Burt.
Yeah, and in one night, somehow, he has completely become devoted to her. I won't leave you. I'll be you. Don't you die on me. Like all these kinds of like lifelong relationships. Somehow he's compressed this all into this little tiny thing. And guess where she is in the third movie? Nowhere to be found. He's married. Yeah,
she got too needy. Had to cut her loose.
By the way, that one night has a favorite trope of mine.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Here's a favorite trope alert.
Sex sheets on the bed. They only go up to the man's waist, but they go all the way up to the woman's chin.
Sex sheets.
Well, you know, the TV series of this Mission Impossible was not really like the James Bond movies, but the movies of Mission Impossible very much take from the James Bond type action. And so that's the reason why we're only seeing, you know, a woman only comes along and she's here just long enough to have sexual relations with and for him to use her and to put her into a very dangerous situation while saying, no, I really care about you. And that's kind of where it goes. And then, of course, you expect her to die. She doesn't.
Yeah.
So they end up with
this movie
ending.
Really doesn't like women. Like it started out, you're like, oh, she's going to be a badass. No, she's just going to dry hump him in a bathtub with her clothes on, and then they're going to simulate sex later in a car with the clothes on, and then she's going to get captured, and she's going to be a damsel in distress the rest of the movie. Yeah. Like, it's too bad, because she's really interesting the first minute she's on the screen.
Right? Yeah, I got to admit to something that had a weird side effect from a movie I know I've talked way too much about, but I'm really into Fury Road, and everyone knows that, but I'm going to mention something about it that I haven't mentioned, and that is this. That movie has served to make it really obvious when female characters are being treated in the damsel in distress manner in other movies. And so in this movie, it really stood out to me that she's just going along doing all the things they always do in movies. This is just the Hollywood way. She's sort of strong, but not really. And then they take her away. And now she's a damsel in distress. And now there's essentially rape happening. Because that guy, you know, this is all, she's not really a willing partner.
Like all this stuff. Done. And the only way for stop while you're naked.
The only way for get out of there is for Tom Cruise to swoop in and save her. And it's just so contrasted now up against something like Fury Road. And I'm sure there are other examples. But that movie just really hit me hard to the point that now I'll see anything else and go, well, why aren't you tougher? Why can't you have your own mind? Why does the male protagonist have to save you every time? It's a weird thing I'm feeling about females in film since I saw
it. Wait, it sounds like you're becoming enlightened.
I don't know, maybe. Maybe
I don't
just
know if I like this.
I don't know about enlightenment. It's more like it's very just noticeable now. Like,
right.
Because that was such a strong thing, and I know there's a lot of controversy about that, and I could care less about the controversy. I just know that that struck me as so against type for movies that now when I see type, I go, this is lame. Why don't you guys do something brave and different, you know? I don't know.
And I blame John Woo 100%. Because, like, when you first see, I don't know how to pronounce her name. I'm going to call her Figgy Newton. When you first see Figgy Newton, she is amazing. She is busting through the biggest security system in the world. And the first thing she does when she gets this Bulgari necklace is she drops it down her dress between her breasts.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, John Woo.
Well,
what are you doing?
That's Figgy Newton for you.
I like that you called the
Bulgari. I don't know.
Yeah, right. I mean, if they would have continued to play off the whole cat burglar kind of, you know, techniques and style that she has, that would have been great.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Another.
Did y'all know that she's going to be in Westworld TV series?
Yeah.
Post-production?
She's a regular. Yeah. That TV show is in. Let's just remind everybody. Post production. That means that thing will be out when. Probably next spring or something.
2015 is when it's saying, so maybe later this year.
This fall?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I mean, I got HBO Now for two reasons. That and then everything else.
Hey, and you know what else? Related, what? I wonder if she got her role in The Slap, that TV series about getting slapped, from her performance in this movie when she slaps Homeboy, because it was horrendous.
When she slaps Homeboy. Yeah, well, I captured that. You can enjoy that later.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no problem there. Oliver Stone was supposed to be attached to this film. He was the director. And
he said, nope.
He wrote a treatment but backed out due to a scheduling conflict, resulting in Tom Cruise's prolonged stint on Eyes Wide Shut. He was doing that too long, and they said, well, like, fine, we'll delay it. And then John Woo came in.
I get to be naked every day.
I'm trying to imagine an Oliver Stone-directed...
They couldn't have done it with this script, I don't think. I think they had to have a different script.
Yeah.
Right.
to have him on.
It would have been grittier. There would have been more. There would have been more talk between the protagonist and the antagonist, and that was the thing. Like, I felt like Ethan Hunt and Doug Ray Scott's character, I'm forgetting his name. I felt like they didn't have a relationship, and I don't understand because we were told they go way back.
Yeah, they used to be partner guys. I mean, it's actually kind of makes it obvious that in the third movie they do the same trope again, where two guys working for the agency and one goes bad, and Ethan Hunt has to, you know, now get revenge on the guy who went bad. I don't know why they keep returning to that in these movies, but also the first movie, I guess, did that too. Mm-hmm. Like double agents, real problem in the world of MI. Mm-hmm.
Apparently so, yeah.
Yeah.
And when you stop working with somebody, hold on to that
mask.
Hold on to that mask for sure, but also hold on to that recommendation you want to give them for their next job. Just wait and see. Make sure that they're still a good guy.
Hold on to that little voice box too that gets taped to your neck.
The little tape thing. Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, that thing gives you an accent and a new voice. It's
okay, we
got
to talk about the masks.
All
because
right.
It comes close to Supernatural for me, and I don't like it.
Either,
right.
Dude.
It does.
No, I really don't.
So, yeah.
Why do you think they honed in so tight on that for these movies? Like, it really is their number one go to
it's their hand of God. You know, I mean, it's their way to get out of anything that they want to show you. Oh, by the way, he was wearing a mask. He's really this person.
What happens is by the last act of the film, I don't think anybody is definitely who they look to be.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
And as an audience, I just feel like it leaves us in the dust. Like,
I'll tell you what though, in the third one, I hate to keep jumping to the third one, but they did a really cool flip on that where they were under the Vatican and they had like hardware there to make a mask in real time. Because they had to get the dude's face and then get it made real quick and then get him out there. And there was something about that made it all seem a lot more
believable.
Believable, yeah. Like you're less likely to think, well, what kind of magic, dark magic is this? Mm-hmm. This thing was just like, and I'm another guy now. And like how did he suddenly, like they don't answer this at all. But when Doug Ray Scott shoots his own guy thinking it's Ethan Hunt because he's inside with his tape on.
Right.
Where did he have that dude's mask? Where did he have one of himself?
Yeah, right. I thought about that.
Yeah,
too.
Does he just keep like a
bag
briefcase,
full of faces,
a back pocket full of masks?
Yeah, and was it just convenient?
Oh, there's one for Candy Newton. No, I didn't use that one.
Was it just convenient? They were essentially wearing the same clothes.
Right. Like, and hey, look at this. This mask makes me look thinner all over.
Yeah, that was weird.
And my hair.
Yeah, it's weird.
You got to carry around a bunch of copies of your own mask.
Yeah,
that's because you never know when you need to put it on somebody else.
Yeah,
I guess so. That really bothered me. I don't know a lot of things.
But I guess that could
be
explained because he had one on site. You know, Sean already had one because he had fooled the girlfriend. So maybe it was there. He found it and he's like, cool, I'll use this and put it on him. And I don't know. Y'all watched Face Off and was all okay with that. So
I was okay with Face Off because the whole main conceit of Face Off was. It's a surgery. You got to have it done. You can't just whip it out. You know,
there was a lot of expertise involved.
Yeah, and that didn't bother me as much. I mean, sure, Face Off had lots of problems. Don't get me wrong, but that conceit was okay because it was like, all right, we're in a surgical place. The guy's got to do this. This is years of work. They finally figured it out. Like, it's not just I've got one of me in my back pocket and one of you in the front, and then done.
I keep it near my scrot.
Wow,
my scrot.
So, finally, or the only other thing I would say about trivia is this. Whoops, where'd it go? Oh, no, not trivia. Spies are good at everything possible. Like, there's no thing they can't be trained in. If it's magic motorcycles, got you covered. If it's, hanging off of stuff, whatever. They're masters of all trades, and I don't think that's how it works. I think actual spies don't have to be perfect at every possible scenario,
right?
Both physical and mental. I don't think it exists that way.
I'd be curious in seeing a quick clip show of all of the different watches and clocks that count down in this movie, because there is constantly some type of, you know, mechanism counting down how long it's going to take something to happen. Also, what the crap is medicine that activates after 20 hours? I mean, I've got a delayed release. I got a delayed release of some medicine, but 20 hours?
Down to the minute, right? 20 hours down to the minute where you can watch it on a watch and say, oh my God, it's 19 hours, 59 minutes, but she's still okay. And then, oh no, she's bad.
Yeah. Did not like it.
That was a little weird. Yeah. Human ticking time bomb trope. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Randy.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I was really bothered by the trope of I didn't catch what you said the first two times.
Yeah.
They use Radha Sherbegia to play the old scientist who gets himself killed. Inventing this thing. And we have to hear him describe why they made this thing in order to make this other thing three freaking times. Yeah, Would you please shut up?
He totally did. That guy, I like that guy, except he, I swear, like on 24, he played three different Russian bad guys in three different seasons. He's always that guy, right? In fact, I even want to say, was he in Avengers?
I loved him when he got killed in the pier in 24. There's so many things where he's in them.
One of the Taken movies is maybe what I'm thinking about. Last Taken movie, he was the bad guy. But anyway, I don't like him in a role that I'm supposed to be sympathetic with. I prefer him to be an evil ex-KGB secret guy.
In The Saint, he is the leader of Russia. He's the bad guy, and he's amazing.
I forget about that. He was great in The Saint.
Yeah. I remember The Saint putting me to sleep. I know we're going to put that on our list at some point. I would really like to see why I was so tired in that movie.
It is kind of a slow burn. It's okay, but yeah, it's not the most exciting.
Because Val Kilmer's voice is just so soothing.
That's right.
Right, it is. Plus, it's talking about cold fusion.
I like him now when he's I like him when he's fat now.
Right? He's skinny again, right? Or
is
he? He's not.
I haven't heard.
Large.
You should be my buffalo wingman anytime. And
I thought about Randy whenever. Whenever Chekhov's finger chopper came out, except they used it really quick. I don't even know if it was Chekhov at that point. It was so fast.
Yeah, when he finally kicked, he just did the tip, just the tip, right? That's all
right. Chopped it right off.
Yeah. So
okay, all right, let's talk about Fingor. Okay. That's an actual trope.
Is it a trope?
Fingor.
All right, tell me more.
It covers actually anything involving eyes, teeth, tongues, throats, genitalia. Mm-hmm. But fingers, man, fingers are the center of Fingor. And it made me think, this movie just brought up so many other movies for me. Like things like Heathers, someone gets his middle finger shot off. Right. Any hostile like or Saw movie, anything like that. You know?
I really need to see
Robin
Heathers.
Robin Williams movie.
I need to see Heathers, don't I? Never seen
it. Oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I brought it up before. I wish it was in my repertoire, but because so many people reference it all the time. And I'm like, I don't know. I thought that was like some rom-com with like, you know, all the Brat Pack in it or something.
Right.
It feels like something John Hughes would have written if he was drunk and angry.
Oh, well, I'm in then.
Hold on to Fingor for just a moment because
right. What,
it's,
what was
it's
the
in...
Robin Williams movie where he was getting the how can you say it? He was getting fellatio. And the car got crashed. Yeah.
I don't remember that. That happened.
That was not good, Fingor.
Captain, my captain. Okay, all right. I have no idea.
Oh man, the worst for me is District 9. Do you remember District 9?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So not only
Armgore.
It is like bookends of Fingor. He loses fingernails at the beginning, and he cuts off his thumb later at the end. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that movie's really good at Fingor. Ooh,
and
I like this trope.
Turns into Zoidberg.
I'm a big fan of it because it's the basis for so much. Like even Game of Thrones, the Stannis's right hand man is all about losing fingers because he broke a rule, and now he's super loyal because he learned that this guy who's his friend would
break
cut his
rule,
fingers off
lose
because
a bandage.
It's all about rules. I love that kind of stuff. So yeah, Fingor, it's still a threat.
It's horrible in this movie because you never really like you get the suspense of it. But there's no payoff.
None.
He's just he just ends up bandaged.
He just goes,
it was really fast.
He just screams in slow motion and then a bandage later. Yeah, that was basically it. Brendan Gleeson in this movie. They would team up later in this Live Die Repeat we just talked about. Mm-hmm. About he played the Irish general dude in that, and in this he played a guy who confessed everything while he thought he was dying. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
I like Brendan Gleeson
a
lot. Yeah, I could watch him do just about anything. I think that guy's amazing.
Also, if you save the country or world, you're totally, forgiven of all things, no matter how much you stole at the very end. Homegirl gets away with everything.
Yep. By the way, if you haven't seen In Bruges, which came out in 2008.
Oh, right.
One of the best movies, I think, ever, with him and...
Clive.
Hold on, I'm going to find it.
Freaking...
His name is Colin Farrell. There you go.
Colin.
Oh, that guy.
It's great, and it's got an 8.0 on IMDb, which is pretty high for IMDb, and it deserves every bit of your time. It's a really, really good little movie.
And of course, people know him as Mad-Eye Moody.
Yeah, yeah, Mad-Eye Moody from the Harry Peter.
Hey, why couldn't Tom Cruise take her with him after she got the shot of 20-hour death? And he's like, I can't take you with me.
Because he had to jump out the wall, and he just only had a parachute for one.
Oh, right.
Parachute for one. Just to,
okay. Parachute for one.
Oh, where was he hiding that?
Because she's so skinny. Right. She would have.
Yeah, in his mask.
Hey, you're looking a little puffy around the cheeks. Don't worry. I'll need this later. So let's rank them. Let's rank the four that are out so far. Mm. There's a fifth in the works. Let's rank the four that are out and see where we land. So here's my list. It goes two. So this is from best to worst, okay?
Wow.
So I just said two and I didn't mean it.
Three. Take it back. Let me
take that back. It goes 3, 4, 1, uh-huh. 2 for me.
Right.
I really liked 4. I'm going to put 4 at the top. 3, right. 1, although I really hate the Michael Phelps betrayal thing. I feel like that's completely a breaking of the character.
Yeah.
And then 2.
Wait, Michael Phelps, the diver?
No, Jim Phelps. I'm sorry, Jim Phelps.
Jim Phelps. Man. Yeah, Michael Phelps is the
he's the gold medalist. He's the swimmer. Yes.
I mean, swimmer, not diver. Jeez, we can't get anything right. All right.
Yeah.
How would you do it there, Randy?
I'd go 1, 3, 4, 2. I think 1 is the truest to all of it and the one that holds up the best. 3 is better than 4 because 4 is just a bland 2012-ish action movie. You know, it didn't have anything special to it. And 2 is just, this is rubbish, guys.
I thought 4 was going to be poo, but I liked it.
I really liked 4, actually, yeah.
You put it at the top. What do you say there, Dunaway?
Well, until we watched this week, I would have said 4 was better than 2. But I'm not quite sure.
Wow.
I'm going to have to go back and watch 4 again because I thought 4 was okay, but I thought it was kind of boring. This movie is at least fun. I'm definitely going 1, 3, and it's going to be really close between 2 and 4.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah. Wow.
So you're just like, you're in the same place I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that they can do that again in the fifth one. Like, they really need to get back to the roots of Mission Impossible somehow. Because you could have told me that the fifth one was a Jason Bourne movie or a Fast and the Furious movie, and it's all the same shit.
Let's see. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, 2015. So it comes out later this year. Directed by Christopher McQuarrie. He's known for what? Director.
Nothing.
He has directed Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, Jack Reacher, and The Way of the Gun.
Now, Jack Reacher. You know what? I thought that was all right.
I did not like Jack Reacher at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was Jack Reacher round.
Yeah, but he's done a bunch of other stuff, written and produced a bunch of things, including Usual Suspects, Edge of Tomorrow, Jack Reacher, and so on. Something to do with Valkyrie. I don't know what his job was there, and I really liked Valkyrie. Valkyrie was great. Anyway, we'll see, I guess. 5 will come out. We'll all decide one way or the t'other if it was any good or not. It doesn't say here. Well, it says, Ethan and team take on their most impossible mission yet, eradicating the Syndicate, an international rogue organization as highly skilled as they are, committed in destroying the IMF. That sounds like a trope in itself. We found a group of spies who are just as good at this as we are. Who will prevail?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Okay. By the way, I just brought it up. All the same stuff and all the same series. We got Mission Impossible series, Fast and the Furious series, Jason Bourne series. What else?
You mean that are similar to this?
Yeah, they're okay. James Bond, the new James Bond, might be.
Yeah,
goes.
I think those totally fit in there. Yeah, I really like those though, or at least the first one.
And the Expendables.
Yeah, okay. kind of in a way. That. Yeah, I think that's
kind of like the low rent version.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. There's got to be something else. Oh. They're trying to reboot the Jack Ryan stuff. Those feel very much like this. That new Jack Ryan with Kirk in it.
Chris Pine.
Yeah, Chris Pine, that's very similar to this.
It's okay.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
It was
good.
It's okay.
It had Kevin Costner in it.
kind of predictable.
Had Kevin Costner in it. There was a scene where him and Chris Pine peed on a plant and drank it and survived. It was great.
I remember that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was really important. Is Die Hard still current enough to fit the list here?
Die Hard.
The last one.
Yeah. Last couple, probably. Yeah. I'd say the last couple. It's funny. They are all adhering to. It's like the Bourne movies came out and everybody else just kind of evolved closer to that. Mm-hmm. For good or ill, that's where we're at with our spy movies, I think. And it'll be interesting to see if somebody does something different moving forward. I don't know who that person is. I hope it'll be set in the Australian desert where gas is king. That's what I hope. One final thing I want to say about a character in here. So, Ibbet, I thought of you again because you're a big Lost fan.
I know who you're going to talk about. You're going to talk about the dude who looks like Justin Timberlake's character from Dick in a Box.
A little bit, yeah. So Ethan, the guy who played Ethan on Lost,
right,
is Tom Cruise's cousin. The actor is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're cousins.
I didn't realize they were related. That's hilarious.
Yeah, first cousins even. And he's in this playing against a character named Ethan, which I think is great. So anyway, just wanted to point that out.
What's that actor's name? Because I'm looking for it right now. Nicholas. No, not Nicholas Bell.
No, it's right here. Where is it? Shit. You know, I'm about 10 links.
Oh, William Mapother.
Is that it?
Huh. Yeah.
No, wait. Yes, that's him. That's and it. He is right here.
Yeah, he's Ethan in Lost kidnaps Claire.
Everybody hated Ethan so much. I remember just hating that dude. Like,
yes,
well, whatnot.
He was
the first other that we saw in Lost.
Younger cousin of Tom Cruise and Lee Ann DeVitt. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he got his last name, but they are cousins.
But tell me he doesn't look like, you know, Justin Timberlake from Dick in a Box. Just put some sunglasses on him and he's...
He is quite literally... Like, you look at him and you can see where the similarities are. But he is the ugly, smacked-in-the-face stick version of Tom Cruise.
Nice.
He even has the middle tooth. Look real close there. He's got the same middle
teeth.
It's a little off. It's hard to say if the nose, the head, the neck, or the tooth is off. He's an ugly man.
Hey, Ibbet, you like Lost? Yeah. Mr. Echo was in Annie the Musical, the new one.
Oh, yeah, no way.
Yeah, he was the driver.
There's somebody from Lost and everything.
Did he get fired toward the end of the movie because he was drinking behind the scenes and got in a car accident and they got pulled over?
No, but he had like...
smoke monster?
Right. Eaten by the... Tuck, tuck, tuck. Oh, it was bad.
I kind of want to watch that again.
You know, Brian, you're right. It's got to be weird to be the guy, the actor, who used to beat out Jorge Garcia for all these like teenage, large dude roles.
Yeah.
Seeing him now, having done 118 episodes of Lost, and you're nobody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Anyway, I've gone down a rabbit hole about William Mapother. What the hell name is that? You know what he is? He's like the Clint Howard to Ron Howard, Mapother to Tom Cruise. That's the thing.
He definitely looks better with the mustache and beard, right? Because when you look at him without it, his nose is all crooked and he's kind of got like a Woody Harrelson thing going.
Yeah.
So he's using the beard to like balance his face, is what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
He's just a strange looking guy. Anyway, good luck to him and his career. Should we do some clips? Are you guys up for that?
Sure.
Oh my gosh, let's do some clips. There's got to be some great ones.
Here's one about don't call me this.
You keep calling me Dimitri. You really shouldn't.
I like that. I like that one.
Because I'm not him.
Don't call me Dimitri.
My name is Tom.
Tom. My name is Humpty.
Mr. Cruise,
pronounced
if you're
nasty. With a Humpty.
How about this one? This is Tom Cruise with a nasal voice. I think they even alluded to him having a cold to try to cover up for this, but here he is.
I see you found it.
I see you hear it.
That was the love scene.
Yeah, that was it. I see you found my wiener. That's my wiener. This one, I don't know. This is a mouthful I wrote. Nothing to do with the wiener. It's something else. This is, let's hear.
I beg you, Dimitri, come to Sydney and accompany me to Atlanta immediately.
Come to Atlanta.
He could really do an advertisement for Atlanta, couldn't he?
Yeah, that was pretty
good. Come to Atlanta.
Yeah, I want to hear him say my Atlanta. I want to hear him say a whole bunch of Atlantas now because that was great. All right, here's
by the Atlanta Tourism Board.
I love montages. And we got one here where he voiceovers as well while they do it.
This transponder chip is completely untraceable. It transmits your location to a satellite, which can be read by only this computer. We can then track you to within 3 feet, anywhere.
They do that all through this movie, though, right? Yeah. It's explaining the tech of what he's going to have to do because it makes it a lot easier than people having to try to remember.
Except,
he has to go down through the louvers and then down to the basement.
Those are called movers, kind of technology that you can just look at anybody anywhere, why do you send the girl over to the guy's mansion?
Because he's a dick. I told you, man. He didn't care about it. He's just going to your abusive boyfriend. No, no. Go ahead.
It was a little dicky.
Yeah. Well, you know, women are cheaper than technology, apparently.
Is that it? So wait, hold on.
This movie keys on tech that I don't understand why they don't use it 24/7.
Mm. What, like the first generation Kodak 1.2 megapixel camera? Yeah. That thing was hot. I had one of those for a company I worked for. We had one, and it was cool for its time and everything, but it didn't do video. And they showed video there, man.
Was that compact flash?
Yeah, it was totally compact flash. Yeah, that was what made it cool, because up till then, it was like floppy disks in the side of big Olympus cameras.
That's right, and mini disks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they totally used mini disks for that, and maybe, I may have this wrong, but I swear somebody made some kind of big, fat, one megapixel camera that you could put a zip disk into the side of.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
I would get that.
Yeah, how soon before, or maybe we already have it and I just haven't seen the movie yet, but instead of the spy having to really guard this little tiny device that has all the files, and he says, oh, no, I put that on the cloud.
Yeah.
Right.
You can download. There's a link. Oh, you can download that.
I hadn't thought about that. Like synced cloud backup stuff, that changes the whole spy, the movie tropes in general are going to all have to adhere to this new idea, or we're going to notice it, you know?
Now you're never going to get that microchip across the county lines and get it to your people. Oh, no, that's all right. I put it up in the cloud and I just texted my boss with
I drop boxed it to my friend in Sweden. It's been up there for 3 days. Like, it's kind of ruining old movies now.
But again, they have the technology to see anybody within 3 feet, but they don't have the technology to just come up with a cure on their own.
Yeah, move that tooth out of the center of his head. How about that?
Right. Don't you think in reality that would have been the whole move here? Oh, we got somebody infected. Let's go make a cure.
So
yeah, we can actually fire that cure down from the satellite within 3 feet.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So in keeping with Metallica's first ever song created for a movie.
At the very end.
Right. They went ahead and decided the whole movie ought to have a bit of the metal in it. So here's a taste of that. The metal version of the theme. I love it, actually.
That was not Metallica-ish at all.
No, but it was still pretty heavy metal for what they've done previous.
Yeah, that's not the one with Edge and Adam Clayton, right?
Nope,
I know that they did.
That's the first one, I think.
They didn't just reuse it for all the movies?
No. I mean, I know it's... That one has definitely got more guitar.
They paid for it. They might as well.
Yeah, they may as well use it. That's a good point. I think that stuff is great. Like, I love that theme. It's classic. It's timeless. Yeah. That's maybe my favorite thing in the movie was that, but I think the rest of the soundtrack...
Oh, hold on a sec. Let's see here. Oh, that's not the Take a Look Around theme from MI2. No, that was performed by Limp Bizkit.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
So who did
it all for the
soundtrack does not cookie. List who does the version of
Metallica.
That's because it was nobody of consequence.
Here.
Oh, I disagree. I disagree. It was Michael Giacchino who I put in my top 5.
That was Michael Giacchino? Well, there you go. Another lost connection.
Yeah.
Among other great music.
Mission Impossible 2.
Why is this listed on IMDb?
The Metallica song is called I Disappear. It was in the credits. I'm going to play a taste of it, just a piece. Here we
go. Little, because Metallica is very litigious.
Skip ahead. Give me some words.
Produced by Bob Rock, by the way.
Oh yeah.
What's the dividing line when the Metallica percussion got really good? Because
saw that video this week, didn't you?
But I was listening to Metallica, and I can't figure it out. If you go back far, the percussion stinks. But I can't figure out what do they do?
Calling out Lars?
It's when Lars said, he says, Napster's bullshit. And then he started playing better. I don't know what happened.
Who knows? The snare jump.
Focused is great.
Yeah.
Right.
He is good though, man. But you're right. This does seem to be a divider, but I don't know what it is. Is it Master Puppets?
No, way after that.
Way after that? Boy, I don't know. Wouldn't be like Loaded and Reloaded, right?
Maybe. I listened to some songs from those, and I kind of like the drums.
Yeah. I actually don't hate Loaded. I know a lot of people don't like it, but I think it's fine. Reloaded is not great. And I don't like that the album cover is basically somebody's bloody logie. I don't like that.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. I don't like that.
I'm a really old school Metallica. I like the oldest stuff.
Holy old stuff's great. Dude, there's some classic stuff. I'm watching...
Ride the Lightning, baby.
They say that they didn't use their music for a movie, but it's not technically true. There's an HBO documentary series about these guys down south who were put in jail for something they didn't do. It's a satanic metal killings or something, and they do music all throughout that thing. So it's not...
Hey. Did you guys see the movie with the Metallica, the Metallica musical movie?
What? No. What?
Oh, yeah. No, the one that takes place like during a Metallica concert and
they got the runner and he's running. There's some kind of things going on. And they're doing a concert during the whole thing.
There's some kind of things going on.
Where this runner has to go get Metallica's, I don't know, some more guitar strings or something. So he's out doing that while they're playing a concert.
I have no idea what this is. This is news to me, man.
So I while we're talking about music, there were three locations that I really felt like this movie had in common. There was Granville Island, Vancouver. There was Moab, Utah, and there was Sydney. Mm-hmm. Like those were that's where this movie happens. Why is this movie so absolutely chock full of Spanish music? I'm curious.
Well, you had the one Spanish scene where they were in. What's the name of that Spanish country?
Yeah, it was Spain.
Yeah,
and
that's where he met with.
I'm not remembering this.
He met with Anthony Hopkins.
John Woo thinks passion comes from there. I think that's where. I just think it was just
maybe, but he meets Hopkins there, and he meets the girl there. That's where she's stealing stuff. Was in Spain, but they weren't there very long. They were kind of out of there. But you're right. That carried through the rest of the movie.
That wasn't filmed in Spain. That was filmed on the west coast of North America.
Yeah, there's no way that was. Yeah, I assumed most of these. I think we got some really nice stock footage of Sydney, and then it was like, all right, we're in Moab still. Let's just film some of this here or whatever. Like, I didn't buy most of that stuff. Was like the beach stuff that was supposed to be Australia. There's no way that was Australia.
Yeah, it didn't feel Australian to me.
No, it looked like this Pacific Northwesty looking. It was all kind of.
Yeah, I hate to jump back to Metallica.
Rocky and
yeah.
I hate to jump back to my Metallica thing, but the movie was called Metallica Through the Nether from 2013. Here's the description of it. Trip, a young roadie for Metallica, is sent on an urgent mission during the band's show, but what seems like a simple assignment turns into a surreal adventure. See, even they can't describe it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'd watch that. That sounds all right. How'd it do?
7.3 out of a possible who knows what.
That's 10. That's good. If that's on IMDb, that's really good.
Hmm. Yeah, it's Scott Johnson who convinced me to watch Some Kind of Monster, which was really good.
Oh, that was great, wasn't it? Is that anywhere streaming now? I don't think it is. Great documentary. Do you trust her is this clip.
The question is, do you trust her?
I just don't like his voice.
The question is, do you trust her?
Ugh. You weren't.
I don't know. Let me see your finger.
You'd have been a terrible Wolverine. So glad you're not him. Here's more of him being annoying.
You breach a lab at the only possible time, whether you break in from the ground or the roof. It's 2300 hours, 1 minute, when the air filtration generators will cover the sound of Hunt's break-in, and the rotating guards make the building vulnerable to our break-in from below.
Are you just reading that off a sheet?
Could that be more boring description?
This is from a PowerPoint, the lecture that I gave on how to break into that facility.
It was the greatest TED Talk of that week, everybody.
Right, if he had shortened his TED Talk down to about a five-minute thing, he could have gotten there and beaten him to the punch.
He had monologue.
Sorry we were late. We were discussing your plan.
He had bad guy monologue-itis, man. That guy would not shut up. Mm-hmm. Woo always does this.
Well, Hunt... How you been?
Finding a bit of a cold.
It's just so like Boudreaux. It just sucks.
Grinning like an idiot every 15 minutes.
I like that.
True story.
Why didn't they just let him have his Scottish accent?
I wish they would let him just stay.
Yeah.
What were they trying to fake there, though? Something else.
They covered a lot of it up, but there was still a lot of it coming through. You could kind of tell when he says free, you know.
I would have thought the hardest part was curbing that pressing need of yours to get your gun off.
Oh, zing.
get your gun off.
Zing. By the way, I've never heard the phrase "get your gun off." It's used twice in this movie. I hate it. It makes me want to throw something at the screen.
They were trying to make it a thing.
It's an inside baseball MI6 kind of thing. You wouldn't get it.
nobody outside of this movie has ever once said
that. MI6 newsletter title.
Right.
Guys, it's
get your gun off.
It's guys, it's time of a part of the show we always like to get to where we have to determine what was said. Welcome to this part of the show. This is where you guys get to determine what was said. So, what did he say?
Put a sock in it!
What did he say?
Put a sock in it!
Put a sock in it?
Oh, that's good. Yes. Yeah, put a sock in it.
Let's try it again.
Put a sock in it!
Okay, like drunk guy yelling, put a sock in it? Because
right. Yeah, that's even on the IMDb quotes page.
Oh, well is done really? Then. Hmm. Well done, everyone. Some drama? Oh, the drama is how I titled this one. Oh, the drama.
I'm infected with Chimera. You know you don't have a choice. Just do it.
There's your Spanish crap in the
just
thing.
Do it. Mm-hmm. I got some penicillin. Will that take care of it?
More drama.
Just stay alive! I'm not going to lose you!
Oh, gosh. I'm not buying it, Tom. You guys weren't close enough to say that to her.
No just, matter what occurs.
Yeah.
Just stay alive. I'm not going to lose you.
Just no matter what occurs, I will find you. You're right, Ibbot. It's the same damn line reworded.
Mm-hmm.
Slappy man. Oh, here's the slap scene there. Dunaway, you ready for this? Here you go.
Feel like pleading for your life?
Oh.
I mean, that was some...
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was some good stuff.
That's pretty good. All right, here's a Wilhelm scream. I found one. Here you go. Oh, can you hear it?
Oh, wow.
Wow, that was
very
really light.
Yeah, very light. Oh. Here, way back there.
It's almost like it was a mistake and they were trying to get it out of the movie.
Right, yeah. Let's just cover it up with some more boom.
I only got one. I felt like Luther was way underused in this.
Absolutely.
Just not enough, but he did have this line.
Punk put a hole in my Versace.
Somebody put a hole in my Versace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I don't understand why he's in the movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a waste.
I don't know.
He didn't do anything.
He's 10 seconds of comic relief is what he is.
Yeah. He's somewhat Mr. T, somewhat Mr. I don't know.
Much better in the fourth one.
Yeah. Third, not in there at all, by the way. Totally not in that movie.
Yeah, which is a bummer.
That was kind of a bummer. All right, here's... Oh, we already did that. Did we do that one?
Greetings, Mr. Hunt. Shit.
We did. Okay, good. Then what do we have? Oh,
Before we get to Twitter posts or...
Yeah.
And a checklist or anything like that. I found the Popular Science description of what would have happened if two people going 50 miles an hour towards each other and colliding at 15/100ths of a second with masses of about 80 and 90 kilograms would have slammed into each other the way that they did in this movie. They would have suffered massive internal trauma and would have had a 50-50 chance of survival.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
Wow. Yeah, you'll take your chances.
You mean they wouldn't have gone sideways off a cliff and landed lightly in the sand?
Right, yes. To continue fighting? Yeah.
Yeah, that was that stuff's kind of, I kind of had fun with the last 15 or so minutes. That chase is all right. That magic motorcycle.
I really enjoyed watching the tires of the motorcycles. The tires go back and forth between road tires and knobbies.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. Like the knobby sand tires were so different. It may have been different wheels on the bikes. It was very interesting to see them they didn't even care to try to hide that.
It's all very
odd. Can a motorcycle like that generate enough smoke from spinning its tires like that to...
Yes.
Really? Can it really? Yes. But also to keep moving at 70 miles an hour down the road? I don't know about that part. Because it was, the smoke, the billowing smoke, yes, you can do that.
Oh,
but
right,
keep moving
right
at the speed he was moving? I don't know about that. That seems impossible.
Physics!
Well, Mission Impossible is what that was.
Mission in physical. It's,
mission in physical. All right. That means that we're done with all that. And that also means that we're ready for the checklist. Magic motorcycle, check. Doves, check. Slow-mo and face zooms, check. Trek stuff. Ronald D. Moore wrote it. He is famous for Star Trek stuff. Mm-hmm. All sorts of things. Jeffrey L. Kimball was in it. He was director of photography. He was also director of photography for Star Trek Nemesis, the much maligned, but I think one of my favorite Star Trek movies. And Brandon Braga, who wrote the story, was also writer and producer. Did something in Star Trek.
Star Trek stuff. A lot of Star Trek writing.
Brandon Braga and Ronald Moore go together.
They're pals,
right? Yeah. Next Generation stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they were doing it, those two. Soundtrack great. I give it LOM for lots of metal. And those are the only parts I liked. Everything else sounded like Face Off leftovers to me. That kind of ding, 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 ding kind of thing. Got a little old real quick. Now it's time for the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Mission Impossible 2. Like MI1, with more huge American nose, less huge French nose, more pigeons, less understandable plot, and zero John Voight. Thank the savior, L. Ron Hubbard. There's zero John Voight.
The savior, L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, no.
Nice. I like that a lot. All right, Brian Dunaway.
Mission Impossible 2, like watching a James Bond movie, but with Tom Cruise and a better theme song. Now stop eyeing my saddle crotch bag, Dimitri.
Better theme song? We're going to have words.
I'm sorry, the Bond does not have a consistent,
oh my God,
awesome
stop,
rockety
stop.
Sound. Is yep, catchy stop. Is dum 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 dum.
I like this argument though. I'm not sure where I land on it, to be honest. I love both for different reasons, but I could see. I don't know. Maybe I'd probably go Bond because it's so classic. But that's not fair either. I don't know. I don't know. I would like to see you two fight.
Let's
fisticuffs.
See what you're humming later on tonight.
Yeah, that's true. You know what I'll be humming? It's so annoying. My wife.
My mom.
She bought me a new, she bought a new ceiling fan for the bedroom. The one we had in there was junk, so we got this other one. And it's great and super quiet and has all these speeds and all this stuff. It's great. But when you turn there's a timer setting to say, all right, I want this to all turn off in 2 hours or 4 hours or whatever. So you set the timer and it makes the first few bars of the Jurassic Park theme. So it goes.
What? Really?
It's like that. And then you go, nee, 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 nee. It makes that sound. So in the case you think I'm kidding, I made a vine of this, and I'm just going to play it for you. I played this on Current Geek the other day, so forgive me if you've heard this, people at home.
Ooh, don't.
But go, give me 1 second here. I think you'll get a kick out of it. All right, skip ahead. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Listen to this. Okay, why isn't it working? Okay, wait, that's not it. Why isn't it working? Hold on. Stupid app.
Some okay. of that Spanish music.
Hey, here you go. Brian, Ibbett, we're not going to get to your Twitter today.
No, hold on, we will. Let's do this real quick. Listen. Why is it loading? Okay, this is really cool, I promise.
It's not
this is, okay.
My ceiling fan sounds like the first part of Jurassic Park. Listen. Nah, nah.
My you hear that?
Yes, totally.
Nee, nee, nee. It's pretty awesome. And so the whole day I'll sing that stupid thing because of it. Anyway, also, Brian Ibbett.
How do I follow that? Mission Impossible 2. For the whole rest of the evening, I was trying to figure out which guy at the bar, the valet, and the restaurant was Tom Cruise with a rubber mask.
All of them is the answer. Ooh, guys, hold on. We have something here. I'll get my sound.
This just handed to me.
We have alternate titles. These are rejected titles from the directors and writers. First is, quote, hey, it's Tom Cruise's cousin who plays Ethan on Lost. Or, hey, three and four made this seem like poopski. So those are your options. We got emails and calls. Let's start with a call this time. You guys call us at 801-471-0462. You leave us messages. And if they're short and interesting, they get played on the show. I have one right here from a listener. I don't remember what it's about, so here it is.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for everything. Calling in, hopefully, right as you just wrap up Mission Impossible 2. I had to give voice to the masses who hate that movie, and hopefully Randy and the Bryans have taken you to town, Scott, for what is a terrible film. Oh, my God. Everything great about the first one, except now we can overdo the masks, and at one point we can kick it sand. And have the gun come directly up in front of us to grab, because that happens perfectly. I mean, I go to the beach all the time and just kick it sand and watch things just shoot straight up at a 90-degree angle so I can grab them. It's great fun. Calling from a rain-soaked Texas where I can't get out of the airport, so thanks for keeping me company during these times, and looking forward to next week, because, wow, yeah, they're going to blow up this movie. It's impossible not to. All right, guys, thanks a lot.
It's Mission Possible that we didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, they didn't need to convince me. It doesn't hold up. I've learned.
Yeah, we needed to convince Brian Dunaway. Anybody,
we've had a switch.
Right, bring it on. Like I said, it was at least entertaining, and sometimes that has great value.
It does it.
Yeah.
Would you say, all right, Brian? Was your exchange of time for this movie, was it a good deal?
Was it reasonable? Well, let's see. I was planning on doing nothing during those 2 hours. So when?
All right. That was mostly an excuse to play that.
What kind of a deal?
All right, great. Thanks for the call. I got one email from The Mule, who says, "Dear Sackers, on Suicide, the Suicide Kings episode, you talked about who whines in movies today. I would like to answer that question for you. There are quite a few whiners, Michael Cera, Hayden Christensen, Nicolas Cage, and Katherine Heigl, to name a few. I think film whining is a proud tradition with a long and storied past, going back to the greats like Lou Costello. I love the show. Keep sacking The Mule."
How do you think about Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, Katherine Heigl really jumps out to me, too, because I'm trying to think of a movie or a show where she's not just constantly complaining about something. And I don't think there's such a thing. Grey's Anatomy, that's all she did.
Right.
And
I don't want to work on people.
Yeah. I like her.
I don't want to wear 100 dresses, bridesmaid dresses.
I think she's really compelling and interesting and can be a good actress and everything, but they just give her roles where she complains a lot. I don't know why she does that. But Hayden Christensen, what's he even doing? What's he doing now?
Complaining. Yeah. Ain't got no roles.
Hiding.
Let's see. Let's find out. What's his latest work? He is 90 Minutes in Heaven is filming. Untaught is in pre-production, and Marco Polo is in pre-production. I guess he's in the next season of that.
I didn't see Outcast. What is that?
I don't know.
I'll tell you, he was super whiny in Jumper.
Yeah, pretty whiny. See that? That was 08.
I don't think I saw that.
You didn't
but
see
you
Jumper?
But, you know, I expect, and you know, I want whininess in my Star Wars. It kind of works out.
Oh,
it's a long tradition.
Like the teleporting, the boof, boof.
Yeah.
Teleporting.
He was basically Nightcrawler.
You didn't
see
my hands.
He was like Nightcrawler without a distance restriction.
Right.
Because he could just poof and bamf anywhere he wanted to be. Good luck, Hayden Christensen. We're thinking of you.
No, we're not.
Oh, we're not? Okay. You can email us at filmsack@gmail.com. Our next film, Escape from Alcatraz. We're getting our Steve McQueen in that?
Mm-hmm. Steve McQueen.
Clint Eastwood.
So does he ever escape?
Birdman of Alcatraz was...
Was that McQueen?
Was that Steve McQueen?
That's what I was thinking. Because
Clint Eastwood is the main dude.
Right.
I'll tell you real quick here. Clint Eastwood...
Yeah, it's Birdman of Alcatraz is Steve McQueen, I think, right?
Yeah, I might be thinking of Fred Ward. A young Fred Ward is in this, and we love Fred Ward, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Patrick, Remo Williams, man.
I found the ass end.
Patrick McGoohan. McGoohan? Patrick McGoohan.
No, Birdman of Alcatraz was Burt Lancaster. But there is a Steve... I know the escape or the... What is it? It's the thing that they remade with Alec Baldwin and...
The Great Escape.
Oh, The Great Escape.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's different. You're right. Looking here just real quick. When did he die? 1980 at age 50. What happened to Steve McQueen? That makes me sad.
It's really young.
Let's see what he died from. I just want to see.
I would say drinking.
He had a cancer. It's from smoking. All right, don't smoke, kids. Don't smoke.
Really? Don't do it.
And if you have to smoke, vape.
And if you can't smoke vape, that's going to bite you in that.
No, do not tell people to do that.
I'm just saying, if you're already smoking, vape. That's better.
Saying that when cigarettes first came out, doctors said, this is the best thing ever. It will cure everything. And I'm a little wary of vaping.
Yeah, I feel like we're better at
I'm sure somebody
now,
will
though.
Argue me down and say, it's super healthy, man. It's good for
and
your
can
lungs.
I clear something up before we get emails?
Dills will have a fight with you. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so The Great Escape, Steve McQueen. Also, The Getaway with Steve McQueen. That's the one that got remade with Kim Basinger and Alec Baldwin.
Is that the one where they do the sex in the car and they're driving and can't really do that? Is that
no,
that
that's The Getaway with...
Charlie Sheen.
That's the chase with Charlie Sheen and the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Christy Swanson.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, all those half-written emails. What a waste.
All the time I just saved people.
Brian just saved everybody a bunch of time. Good job. so be here next week for Escape from Alcatraz. After that, we got some interesting stuff coming up. We'll get to all that soon enough. Thank you all for being here. Filmsack.com is our website. You can find us again via email, filmsack@gmail.com. You can also send us your voicemails, 801-471-0462. On Twitter, we're @FilmSack. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
See you, Dimitri.
Oh, don't call me Dimitri anymore. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Terrain, terrain, pull up. Terrain.
You may select any two team members, but it is essential that the